gender forking before noon.
Before dawn.
Before dawn. It's not before dawn.
No, it's not.
It's, I mean, we're making a huge deal out of it. It is 10:15 in the morning. It's not that early. A Twilight Saga podcast where we talk about Stephanie Meyer's anti-Indigenous
propaganda
piece, New Moon.
This is episode 9. Today we read
chapters
15 and 16.
Pressure and Paris.
Paris?
Oh, I read the whole chapter and it didn't occur to me until this second. I was like, Bella doesn't go to Paris.
No.
And I read the whole chapter without realizing, again, what it was, even though it was explicitly mentioned.
I forgot this part in the book where she goes to Paris.
Yeah. I was literally like, do they have a layover in Paris?
It's spring break. I'm Sam.
I'm Lori.
And this was a sad section.
Yeah.
So, content warning for...
suicidality.
Suicidality, suicide attempt, arguably. Yeah.
Death in general.
Yeah, death. Probably some other stuff. You know, if you didn't know this, I put the content warnings in the description for each episode. Yep. So if you are looking for them, they are there. But at this point, you probably know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone can be truly shocked by what they run into when engaging with this podcast mm-hmm. and cracking open these books in these ways.
Mm-hmm.
It is morning. We're having tea.
Yeah.
You're having the caffeinated tea, which is super... Is it caffeinated?
It is caffeinated. Here's what's up.
Mm-hmm.
This was the busiest week I've had
yep.
since I quit my last job.
Yeah.
Which was like this all the time. And I was used to it when I was in it, mm-hmm. like the 8.5 hour of nonstop work mm-hmm. day. And that's not what my current job is like, which I'm so grateful for. However, it is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we have been absolutely grinding at mm-hmm. work. And so I have been very, very tired. I woke up this morning and had to read this book early on a Saturday. And I had one drink last night. One fun drink. I woke up and I felt like I felt after drinking 7 drinks in college.
You're hungover?
I don't think I would call it like a full-blown hangover.
Uh-huh.
But there's a notable difference between how I felt when I woke up today and how I usually feel when I wake
okay.
up.
Okay, yeah. I feel fine.
From one drink.
I also had one drink. Lori and I both had 25% of a cocktail last night, and then we're like planning this whole day, writing yeah. it down.
We had like one sip. I had like one big sip, and I was like, 9:30, I show up, 9:45, we start recording. I will bring bagel.
We're only like 20 minutes behind schedule.
Yeah, which is pretty remarkable.
You know what? It's fine. We're on schedule. We're going apple picking later. Yep. That's why we're being so tight on the schedule. We're just like really busy working, full-time
workers.
We're
just like having a day. We have to catch fall before it's all gone.
That's so true.
Because it's peak foliage right now.
Yeah.
And if we don't go apple picking today, it is literally all over for us.
Yeah, yeah. So everyone take something off of Lori's plate by being super aware of domestic violence.
Yeah, be aware of it. Maybe, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. If you're thinking about it,
you heard it here first. Revolutionary concept.
I call this primary prevention work. I'll be logging 45 seconds of work this morning.
Informal outreach. Here we go. Yep.
And from here on out, all of my statements do not reflect my workplace.
Would you like to try this tea? It is yeah. from the island of Crete, featuring several herbs that are only grown there and is considered to have healing powers. Ooh, what kind of tea is this?
Would you like to try the... Here, I want to say it on the microphone.
Okay.
Would you like to try this tea? It's from 4 minutes down the street.
Uh-huh.
It's called English breakfast.
Oh, great. I had one this morning from here.
Ooh, this smells really good. It's like it's spicy.
They call it mountain tea.
It smells like something.
Does it smell like... Oh, this is good, actually.
It is really good.
Is this real milk? Is that why it's good?
Yeah. It's half and half.
Lori's drinking milk.
No, but not like that. Don't ruin my reputation. More importantly, you're drinking milk and you should take a dairy.
You know what? I did have that. I did have cream cheese.
Maybe you should take a little lactose.
But I'm drinking the healing tea from Crete.
Okay, we'll see what it does.
I'm fine.
That was a fun little tea swap segment. Maybe we should do that every time we record in the morning.
Which is never.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, so chapter 15, pressure.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so now this makes sense to me. For the first time. why it's called pressure. Pressure. Because of the pressure of the storm.
Oh.
And also other pressure, but like...
I never think, when I read books at all, I never think about chapter titles.
Yeah.
Ever.
Mm-hmm.
There's that.
But you know what? It's like a little bonus.
Mm-hmm. It's spring break.
Party.
Party.
It's spring break.
Everybody's going to Cancun. Just kidding.
She says, last spring break, I had been hunted by a vampire. And it's like, did that happen over spring break? She never mentioned it. I thought she wasn't missing school. She didn't have to miss any school for that.
I don't think it was like clearly outlined. Maybe this is Stephanie like trying to be like, she didn't miss school.
Yeah. Revisionist history once again.
Yeah. She's like working a little bit. Jacob's kind of like following her around. The wolves are like trying to handle things.
Yeah. What stood out to me about this is that obviously they just decided that she was going to hang out more in La Push.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess because it's spring break and she doesn't have school, she's spending all of her time there and she's hanging out alone on the beach most of the time.
Which, like, doesn't seem perhaps...
Doesn't seem more safe to me.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like that's... I mean, it's closer to probably where anybody that could help her is, like, than her house, I guess. I think we said this in the last episode. I'm glad that, like, Sam and Jacob are giving Bella agency and that she is not being forced to behave in any certain way to, like, increase her safety. Because a plan to keep someone safe only works if they're willing to do it.
For sure.
Which is why it never worked when Edward tried it.
So true. Yeah.
I'm glad that she's able to, like, have the agency. Like, I wouldn't want Jacob to be like, you're sitting inside at Billy's house.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah. But at the same time, is it really helpful? Is it helpful for her to just kind of, like, be by herself at the beach?
I don't think so. You know what I think? Like, I know she really credits Jacob to being this really positive influence that stops her from completely spiraling. But, like, I think Billy is a really underutilized resource here because I think what's so healing for her with Jacob is that he knows everything
mm-hmm.
and doesn't force her to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Billy would do the same thing for her. Like, I don't think there's anything romantic about Bella and Jacob's relationship that is like, anchoring her any more than, like, a positive relationship with other people that also understood what she was going through could have for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, she could have that with Billy if she spent time with him. She could also learn a lot more. Like, he's such an underutilized character, which is something that I was, like, really bummed about in this section because, like, if this is the book that most prominently features the Quileute nation, like, all of these characters,
mm-hmm.
we really don't have much still.
No.
I mean, I know Eclipse has them too, and like there's more throughout the rest of the books, but it just feels like what an underutilized character to have this person who is old enough to likely like remember so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is the whole point of this book is to do world building for this part of the story, and yet so much is still left underdeveloped.
Her just walking around on the beach is like not what
I would've chosen. It's like, is that keeping her safe? If so, okay, but like at what cost?
Right.
And I think it's important for the rest of the chapter that we realize that Bella is spending several days by herself with her thoughts.
She's absolutely driving herself crazy.
Yeah.
Like, she is losing
this touch. Is so bad for her. This is the opposite of what she needs
this
mentally.
This is, like, why people say to stay in as close to a routine as you possibly can
mm-hmm.
after experiencing a dramatic change. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't have school all of a sudden. She doesn't have Jacob all of a sudden there all the time. She can't even be in her own, like, familiar surroundings all of a sudden. It's just, like, all these big changes. And it's, like, that really makes a huge difference to her mental state in this chapter.
Yeah, yeah. So she hangs out on the beach by herself, and occasionally Jake comes and checks in on her. So this section is kind of reaches the climax of the potential romance between Jacob and Bella is, like, this is kind of where it peaks in these two chapters. And so she's, like, thinking about it a lot. This says she's thinking about something Jared had said when Jared called her Jacob's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of more of the same, right? Like, she's like, I suppose that was exactly what it looks like from the outside, but as long as Jake and I knew how it really was, I shouldn't let those kinds of assumptions bother me.
Yeah.
And maybe they wouldn't if I hadn't known that Jake would have loved for things to be what they appeared. That's so loaded, Bella.
I have so many thoughts on this, like, this whole section. Mm-hmm. And we'll probably talk about it it's probably better to talk about it later when grapples with this question. But yeah. She's throughout this whole section also, like, mentioning multiple times that he's reaching out and initiating, like, physical contact that she really enjoys. But, like, she's also so touch-starved that it's, like, you can enjoy physical contact from someone and have that not mean anything.
Yeah, they're holding hands a lot. And she never says, like, oh, it feels so nice to be close to Jake. Like, it's the part about the touching that she enjoys is not about him at all.
It's the warmth and the fact that it's happening at all.
Yeah, it is way more about being touch-starved. I feel weird about that for so many reasons. It seems like Bella is, like, constantly trying to tell herself that she should be okay with what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And she just wants to make her friend happy.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, Jake knows that she doesn't feel the same way, but he's still fine with it. Like, that vibe gives me so many bad vibes.
If I knew someone that was in that situation in my actual, like, life,
right,
I would be, like, horrified. Like, I would be like, I don't, like, this is not sustainable.
Yeah. There's this really interesting part, too, on the second page of the chapter where she goes to work and mm-hmm. Jacob follows her there to make sure that she gets there safely. And Mike is like, are you dating that kid? She doesn't say no. She says not in the technical sense of the word. Like, we're best friends. It's like, what kind of response is that, first of all?
It's like that's a yes.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that she doesn't care to make the distinction.
Right. She doesn't want to, like, shut down that. And like, I don't know if she realizes that if she says, like, when she says that to Mike, he's going to think yes.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess she doesn't really care. I guess she doesn't really care at all about what humans think.
For sure. At this point. I think that's also true.
She's so deep into it now. Like, it was bad enough with the Cullens, and she tried to, like, have that little bit of human normalcy after, mm-hmm. like, Edward left. But mm-hmm. then it just seems like now she is balls deep in this other struggle that, mm-hmm. like, she doesn't care at all about the humans in her life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mike says, don't kid yourself, Bella. That guy's head over heels for you. And she said, I know. Life is complicated. And Mike says under his breath, and girls are cruel. And it's like, Jesus,
Mike. Jesus Christ. Like, and that really sticks with her. She, like, ruminates on that.
Yeah, and later. It's like, maybe don't listen to Mike. But yeah, we'll get to that later.
Mike Newton isn't the best person to be giving you relationship advice. It's, do you, like, ever think about that?
This is how bad of a place she's in, is that she's starting to, like, listen to what Mike has to say.
Yeah.
It never bothered her when it was Edward,
mm-hmm.
you know? And now she's letting it get to her, and she's not trusting herself.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
She and Jacob have a little talk about wolf stuff.
They're all at Billy's house again. Sam and Emily joined, and Emily brought a cake.
Yeah.
Seems like a great baking opportunity.
We get to make a cake.
Emily brought a cake that would have won over a harder man than Charlie. I could see as the conversation flowed naturally through a range of casual subjects that any worries that Charlie might have harbored about gangs and La Push were being dissolved. Whose fault is that?
Right. You literally constructed this narrative and then were like, oh, thank God, Charlie doesn't think that anymore. It's like,
you could have put in any effort.
Bella. They talk a little bit more about, like, the mechanics of being a werewolf.
It's
the, like,
this big info dump.
Yeah.
Big info dump. Because we only have so much time left.
Yeah. We only have so much time left when Edward's not here.
Yeah.
So they're warmer than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
They heal fast. They are big.
Yep.
And they can lose control.
First of all, when talking about healing fast, Jacob is like, it's really cool. Do you want to see? And pulls out a pocket knife and is about to literally cut himself to prove it to her. And she's like, please do not do that.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that, actually.
No. And then this, like, conversation about...
Yes, the control conversation.
The control conversation. Yes. I just want to read it.
Yeah.
They're talking about changing into a werewolf initially. Sometimes if you get really upset or something, that can trigger it early. But I wasn't upset about anything. I was happy because of you, mostly. That's why it didn't happen to me sooner. Instead, it just kept on building up inside of me like I was a time bomb. You know what set me off? I got back from that movie and Billy said I looked weird. That was all, but I just snapped. And then I exploded. I almost ripped his face off. My own father. And it's like, this is so horrible.
Yep.
Hate it.
Moment of silence for that paragraph.
Long pause. I'm just thinking about all the different ways in which it's horrible. And it's like the narrative that, like...
Want to break it down? We can break it down.
Yeah.
First of all, the idea of, like, the external stimuli causing, mm-hmm. triggering a break in control that he's, mm-hmm. like, just barely has on himself. Like, the idea that it comes from the outside and it's not his fault.
Yeah.
Is one thing.
Which is contrary to most violence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, most of the time, like, when we think about violence and abuse, mm-hmm. that's not what's happening. It's not someone else's fault.
I think that...
It's a choice.
Right. And I think that this story does this really interesting thing where, you know, obviously it's a story and there are, like, metaphors and stuff, blah, 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 blah. But, like, taking the idea, like, the very real ideas that we have about violence, they become the stand-in for, like, standard monster lore and, yeah. like, get... combined in these really socially salient ways that I don't think were intentional. Like, obviously this book is not meant to be a commentary on ideas about violence. Mm-hmm. And yet here it is. It's like a shining beacon of content for that exact conversation. But I think it would be easy to sit back and be like, okay, well, he really doesn't have control because it's written that way and he's a werewolf. Mm-hmm. But like, it doesn't read like that, especially because there's a extreme romantic context.
Yeah. There's also like this whole piece between him and Sam, like this thing where there's like now what, five going on, like six men who are putting their own community in like a lot of danger.
Mm-hmm.
And how that's just like a presumed like part of how they've always lived because this has always been a part of their like,
yeah,
you know, cultural thing. When there's been a wolf pack, there has been increased protection, but mm-hmm. that also comes with a huge risk of like collateral damage.
Yeah.
Like, it feels very reminiscent of how people talk about violence within subcultures or like
different
within
racial communities.
Communities of color. Yeah, yeah, it just feels like, well, if you want autonomy and you want, if you want like sovereignty, then you just have to find a way to deal with the fact that like violence is going to happen in your community,
mm-hmm.
and like figure out the resources to deal with that, because we're not going to help you if you don't want our if you don't want us to tell you what to do, then we're not going to help you at all, which like,
yeah,
mm-hmm. it just feels like a misappropriation of like what is actually going on in the world too, because mm-hmm. like the really high rates of violence against Native people, that is the only like racial group where there's like a cross racial relationship often between who's perpetrating violence and who's experiencing it.
Right.
Native people are much more likely to experience violence at the hands of white people
mm-hmm.
than any other group other than white people.
Yeah. And I feel like
I
Stephanie
hope that
Meyer
made sense.
I think so. If it doesn't, I'll edit it so it makes sense.
Thanks.
This is one of the things that Stephanie Meyer like kind of weasels her way out of discussing. Like a lot of the world building she does, it's like kind of unexplainable in a way that just like raises a lot of questions. And like one of those questions is like, well, how dangerous are the wolves actually? Because
yeah.
it seems like they don't know. Which is mm-hmm. weird because they seem to know everything else about being a wolf and like what that comes with and like how to do it. Like
yeah.
Billy says in this section, like this information has been passed down. Like they don't forget anything except like this seems to be kind of up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what even the purpose of that is. It's not changing really the story in any way except
yeah.
to add fear.
It does. It adds fear and it adds like a little bit of an interesting dynamic and like a little bit of depth to Sam's character that he has really, really deeply hurt his partner.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily need to be there.
No.
Like, he doesn't need that depth for the story to like make sense. I feel like it would even be more interesting if Jacob provided like the option of Jacob and the option of living like alongside Jacob and living amongst the wolves offered something that was in contrast to the danger that Edward poses. And like in some
yeah.
ways it does function like that, but how much more interesting would it be if Jacob was able to confidently say, I will never hurt you.
Yeah.
I could never lose control and hurt you.
Yeah. So I kind of wonder like if that's part of it, where like if that were the case, then the rivalry between them wouldn't be so torn, because like
yeah.
one of them would clearly be the safer option.
Right. And she probably still wouldn't make that decision.
Mm-mm.
Like she still wouldn't choose to be with Jacob even if he were 100% guaranteed the safest option for her.
Yeah.
But like it would be, I think it would be a lot more interesting if he was like, look, like I don't understand like why you are putting your life and everyone else in your like world life at risk by being with this person when I clearly make more sense, which he tries to position himself that way, but it's not,
it's not authentic
because he, like, Emily's right there. Yeah. And he almost killed Billy, apparently.
And he keeps saying things like, I feel out of control.
Yeah. And like, he keeps questioning how safe she is. It's almost like he doesn't have the self-hatred that Edward does.
Yes.
Like, he
doesn't. That's definitely part of it.
Like, that piece isn't there for him. So he doesn't hate himself. He still has full connection to his previous human self, mm-hmm. whereas like Edward lost a lot of that mm-hmm. connection. So Jacob knows he's the same person as he was before, and Edward feels completely different mm-hmm. than he likely did when he was alive as a human.
Yeah.
And so he just absolutely like turns that into self-hatred and like feeling very lost and like spiritually like adrift and all that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. that is not Jacob's experience.
A big part of their rivalry is that Edward gets to say, oh, Jacob's dangerous, you shouldn't be around him.
Yeah.
And if he didn't have that, what would he have? Oh, I'm just being racist.
Right. Or like, oh, don't you love me more?
Yeah.
Like, that's not as interesting.
Yeah, I guess not.
I guess. I'd be exhausted if I had two people that I was trying to choose between being with for the rest of my life and both of them were like doing this. I'm a monster.
Oh, I know.
I'm a monster. I hurt people.
Like, the amount of... Ugh. I don't know if I should call it emotional labor, but the amount of time that Bella has to spend attending to that exact sentiment is, like, inappropriate.
Yeah, it is.
It's also just, like, it feels like there's too much of a parallel. Because, like, even in this conversation, she's like, oh, well, what's, like, these are all the bad parts about being a wolf, but, like, what's the best part? And he's like, the best part is the speed. Where have we heard that before?
Yeah, literally. Yeah, I just think this would be a very, like, a very different and much more interesting story if this choice was much bigger. Mm-hmm. Like, if there was a bigger choice and as, like, if they were totally different people. But Edward and Jacob breed so similar sometimes that I'm just like, they say things that I can hear the other one saying.
Yeah.
Like, you know, her options here, like, there's really not much of a difference between Team Edward and Team Jacob if you think about it, because they're both little, like, whiny, needy boys, you know? I feel like it would be fascinating if she had a bigger choice to make.
It truly would. It truly would. He also asks her in this section about vampires, and she's, like, really hesitant because she's like, I don't, it feels weird to like kind of spill these secrets. And this is the part where he actually does see her scar.
And he like gets sick.
He starts to shake as if he's like getting so mad that he's going to turn into a wolf. And I'm like, once again, Bella's trauma becomes about someone who feels like they have a claim on her.
That is so interesting. What I thought was because it felt like he was like getting like uncontrollably upset.
Yeah.
Almost like subconsciously. I was wondering if... And this is horrible. If he might be, like, grappling, like, physically, not even, like, not consciously, because he doesn't know about this yet. But I wonder if his body is grappling with the fact that Renesmee's existence was put into danger by Bella being bitten.
I hate that so much.
Don't you hate that? Like, maybe that's it.
Because maybe it
seems like a huge reaction to be, like, upset that she kind of did, kind of... didn't turn into a vampire. You know, like, I just feel like maybe he's viscerally reacting to, like, if Bella's turned into a vampire before she has a baby, Jacob will not have Renesmee. And, like, if Bella dies before she has a baby, Jacob will not have Renesmee. And I think, like, maybe his body knows that.
The body keeps the score.
The body keeps the score. The body brings up the score before you even know about the score. There's a little bit of foreshadowing here that, like, Jacob is an important member of this wolf pack.
Yeah.
And talking about the lineage of, because Ephraim Black was his father's grandfather and Quill Atiera was his mother's grandfather. Mm-hmm. So Quill's great-grandfather. So Quill and Jacob are second cousins.
So besties.
Cute. So, there's that, too.
Yeah.
Just a lot of information.
A lot of information within the span of 5 pages. Mm-hmm. Jacob starts to ask her about if any of the Cullens had other powers. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, at this point, he's getting upset about her being bitten. So, he's, like, trying to calm down. And she wants to calm him down, but she doesn't know if she wants to share this information.
She sure does, though.
Yeah, she sure does. And she says, I spoke quickly, the image of Emily's ruined face in my mind and the hair rising on my arms. I couldn't imagine how the russet wolf would fit inside the rabbit, the car. Jacob would tear the whole garage apart if he changed now. And so, and then she gives that information. So it kind of seems like she's only giving it because she's afraid of
yeah,
getting hurt if she, he doesn't,
like,
calm down.
Yeah, she, like, literally starts thinking, she's like, well, I'm gonna be just like Emily, a ruined beauty.
I'm gonna be ugly.
Yeah. People just really hate facial difference.
Yeah.
Like, they really do, in whatever way.
She talks about a little bit about why she's hanging out on the beach, and I'm glad that this paragraph is in here, because I'm like, why isn't she hanging out at Emily's house?
Mm-hmm.
And she says she does go to Emily's house, and it was really nice, and that Emily...
I think Emily's my favorite character.
I know, right? Emily's a cheerful person who never sat still. I drifted behind her while she flitted around her little house and yard, scrubbing at the spotless floor, pulling a tiny weed, fixing a broken hinge, tugging a string of wool through an ancient loom, and always cooking too, etc., etc. Is she a housewife?
Yeah, and also, what's she doing with the loom?
Yeah, I know, the loom caught me off guard.
Or is she, like, is this, like, Stephanie trying to be, like, what do Native people do? Make crafts?
Yeah.
Like, maybe. I feel like maybe that's what it is. She could be. I mean, like, these boys are going through a lot of clothing, so maybe she's, like, actually physically making them clothing, but I'd like to know.
Yeah. I guess she doesn't work.
I guess not.
So.
Also, like, Bella says this thing at the end of that paragraph that says, it wasn't hard to be with her. After all, we were both wolf girls now. And it's, like, Bella wants, like, girlfriend status. Like, she wants to be thought of as, like, parallel to Emily. She, like, wants to be, I don't know, she's, like, got that, like, whole, like, I'm forming this bond with this girl because, like, we are the same. And it's, like, you are making this so confusing, because it's, like, you want this girlfriend status, you want to be thought of as, like, this important, like, maternal figure for some reason, but you also don't want the title.
Yeah.
And, like, you really shouldn't be able to have those things.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
With, like, what you're willing to commit to Jacob right now.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get to act like you're, like, Emily.
Yeah.
Also, parenting these children.
She just got here.
Yeah. Like, 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Like, you've known about this for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And you're already like, oh, me and Emily, we're wolf girls.
I'm part of the pack.
Yeah, like, shut up. And you're going to leave them, too. That's what's so infuriating to me is, like, she goes through this whole section, like, grappling with her place in their world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's like they openly, like, welcome her in with open arms. Mm-hmm. And then I just, like, can't imagine, like, what that must feel like for them to have her go immediately back to the Cullens. Not only for Jacob, but for, like, everyone. Now she holds, like, their biggest secret and is not, like, sleeping with the enemy, but, like... Yeah.
Definitely not that.
Yeah, definitely not that. But, like, she's, like, literally, like, going back to the Cullens, and she has all this information about them, and that is dangerous to them, and that's a threat to them. It's much more of a threat to them than it is a threat to the Cullens.
Yeah.
For her to have information.
Yeah. Yeah, so she doesn't want to hang out with Emily because... whenever Sam's around, they're all lovey-dovey, and she can't stand it.
The way that she describes it, like, they're not being, like, gross.
Mm-mm.
Some people just hate PDA. Like, hate seeing it.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I wonder if Bella, like, feels that way, or if she, like, is feeling it specifically because she's feeling so uncomfortable about, like, the state of her life, or if it's, like, her externalizing her discomfort with, like, what is happening with Jacob, because it's, like, that's a really strong reaction to have to them being,
I mean, she
in
thinks
love.
It's because she thinks it's because of Edward, and she thinks it's because she's, like,
just
like, heartbroken, but
I kind of feel like it might actually be because she just, like, doesn't. I feel like this whole section is just her trying to convince herself that she could be okay with Jacob.
Definitely.
And I think that rather than what she thinks this is doing to her, she is realizing that she will not have the love that Emily and Sam have with Jacob.
Yeah.
And that, like, it probably feels very, like, stressful to her that, like, if she chose to be with Jacob, they would be around Sam and Emily all the time, and they would be like that, and Bella is, like, barely still okay with just, like, holding hands and, like, hugging.
Right. She's, like...
Which is fine.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously.
It's, like, also maybe a sign that, like, she would not...
authentically be in...
Yeah. If all you can do is hold hands with someone, and you have, like, you've never even, like, thought about kissing them.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you don't like that person romantically.
Yeah, and she's really trying to convince herself that she's gonna
settle. She's trying to force herself.
Yeah.
It is very interesting.
It's a shocking thing for a 17-year-old to be doing.
Yes.
It is so wild.
I know.
Is she 18 now?
She's 18. Okay. But yeah,
it's
whatever.
It's a shocking thing for an 18-year-old to be doing.
Yeah.
I don't think it's atypical. Like, I do think that, like, people at that age do think like that.
Yeah, for sure. She's like, I'm an adult now, and this is it.
I mean, like, it really calls into question, like, if Jacob wasn't there, if Jacob didn't exist, Jacob wasn't an element in this story, would she be trying to rationalize her attraction to Mike Newton?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get why she feels like she has to pick, like, why she has to be in a relationship.
Yeah.
She's trying to convince herself that that's the best course, which it really, really is not. Well, there's more of that later, but...
Yeah, 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 we'll talk about it again.
Jacob is like, oh, sorry I've been so busy. Like, I'll take tomorrow off. We'll just have some fun. And by fun, he means cliff diving. He's going to take her cliff diving.
He is so stupid. Like...
He really is a 16-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets away with a lot, and he shouldn't.
And he says, it's a date, and she says, okay.
Like, what is that? I would never, like, if someone who was interested in me and I was not interested in said, it's a date, I'd be like, okay, but it's not.
Right.
Like, you know?
Yeah.
And then I would, like, make an excuse and get out of it.
It's like, also, if you say, oh my God, just, like, it's a date is, like, such a wild thing to say.
Yeah.
She's, but- like, using, she's, and again, it's, like, this constant push and pull between which of them, like, they're both being horrible to each other because Bella is using Jacob as access to her hallucinations of Edward.
Yeah.
Like, he is enabling and making possible, like, this thing that he doesn't even know is going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, she's not being honest with him about that. And also, like, he is pushing the boundaries of, like, what she is okay with.
Mm-hmm. Constantly.
And he thinks it's okay to do that because he keeps saying, I know you're not where I am. But there's always this, like, unspoken yet.
Yeah, yeah.
In his mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he's also, like, he's 16.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is also, like, I don't know, just, like, for some reason so fixated on the fact that he has to be with Bella.
Yeah. When, like, anyone could tell him that that's not a good choice.
Yeah.
Like, literally anyone.
Yeah.
I think the only person who would, like, be okay with that would actually be Charlie.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Ugh.
She even, this part killed me at the bottom of 352.
Mm-hmm.
She said, the idea of a distraction from all my worries had me almost excited. Maybe it would be fun. A date with Jacob, a date with Edward. I laughed darkly to myself. Just completely leaning into it.
Yeah, it's horrifying. She says, Jacob could say what he wanted about us being a messed up pair. I was the one who was truly messed up. I made him seem downright normal. God.
Yeah.
She's really unhinged.
She is really starting to unravel here. Or she is unraveled.
Yeah. And this is, again, just another place where, like, Stephanie is using, like, the language of addiction.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
like, she doesn't go so far as to, like, necessarily, like, name a substance this mm-hmm. time, but she's, like, using this language of, like, addiction and withdrawal to, like, to describe how Bella is feeling about these hallucinations of Edward, and I'm just like,
yeah,
oh boy.
And she also describes her attachment to Jacob in the same way.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's interesting.
It's a shame. Knowing how the series goes and mm-hmm. knowing that Bella will never experience, like, a secure attachment.
I thought you were going to say experience drugs.
No! No. I was going to say something much better.
She'll never know what it's actually like.
No, I think it's a shame that she will never experience, like a normal, secure relationship where she doesn't have to be so anxious.
Mm-hmm. I guess the only way to get secure attachment is to achieve immortality, if you think about it.
I guess.
Because no one will ever die and leave you.
Sometimes you have to, like, really, really lean into anxious attachment to get secure attachment.
Yeah.
Or that's what people with anxious attachment think.
Yeah. So she goes to Jacob's house in the morning to meet up with him for cliff diving, but he's not there because they found a fresh trail of Victoria's, so all the wolves have gone out to try to find her. This is bad news for Bella because she was really looking forward to hearing Edward's voice, and now that she's not going to get it and she's not even going to see Jacob, she is starting to feel just really, really bad. Really, really bad. And there is a storm brewing. And it's described for a long time. This mm-hmm. whole section is felt long to me. I mean, I don't know how long it actually is. It's like an 8-page section, which feels like a long time in Stephenie Meyer world. There's like a literal hurricane coming. Is that what it is? I think so.
I don't know if it's a hurricane.
I think Jacob later describes it as a hurricane.
I don't know if he's right.
It's just
I think hurricane season is not in the spring.
That's true.
So I don't think it's actually a hurricane, but it probably is like a big storm. Yeah.
Yeah. The storm is brewing. You know, there's pressure in the air. The waves are kind of going. She says, I tried not to think about the danger Jacob and his friends were in because nothing could happen to Jacob. The thought was unendurable. I had lost too much already. Would fate take the last few shreds of peace left behind? That seemed unfair, out of balance. But maybe I'd violated some unknown rule, crossed some line that had condemned me. Maybe it was wrong to be so involved with myths and legends, to turn my back on the human world. That was 355.
Okay, yeah, on the next page, and I think this is where we're going to probably start talking about suicide. I have been looking forward to reading this section.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like it's necessary to characterize this in the binary of whether this was a suicide attempt
for sure
or not, because I just like feel like it's probably more complicated than that.
Yeah.
However, there are things that she says here that like indicate that she's feeling distress to the point of death,
mm-hmm.
like regardless of whether she is making the conscious choice to end her life.
Yeah, she doesn't care what happens to her.
She said, I had been counting on hearing Edward this morning. It seemed like that was the one thing that might make it bearable to live through the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that is huge.
Definitely.
There are three tiny threads tethering her to human life. One of them is Edward, one of them is Jacob, and one of them is Charlie. And mm-hmm. she forgets that Charlie exists until after she jumps.
That's true. That's so true. She is seeking Edward's voice now as a way to quench the pain that she's experiencing. And so she decides that she's going to cliff dive by herself. She says, Jake had promised me cliff diving, hadn't he? Just because he was unavailable, should I have to give up the distraction I needed so badly? Needed even worse because Jacob was out risking his life. Risking it, in essence, for me. If it weren't for me, Victoria would not be killing people here. Just somewhere else, far away. If anything happened to Jacob, it would be my fault. That realization stabbed deep and had me jogging back up to the road towards Billy's house where my truck waited. So she's essentially grappling with the ideas about, like, this is all my fault. If it weren't for me, everyone would be safe. She's not saying if I were out of the picture, this would all be over. But, like, there is maybe that implication.
Yeah, and I think that she's, like, partially, like, her concern about Jacob being away is that he's not immediately present to, like, help her feel whole and stuff. But, like, if something happened to Jacob, literally what would she do?
Mm-hmm.
Because she has been so wholeheartedly depending on him for, like, any sort of stability that, like, I don't know.
Yeah. She says, it was hard not to convince myself that I didn't have time to search for another way, which means she was considering jumping from lower down.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't even, like, try to find that outcropping. She says, I wanted to jump from the top. This was the image that had lingered in my head. I wanted the long fall that would feel like flying. I knew that this was the stupidest, most reckless thing I had done yet. The thought made me smile.
She's not actively thinking of dying.
No. But
she's not at all thinking about
being alive.
Yeah, she's being, as she says, like, extremely reckless.
Mm-hmm. And then she does get up there and she is about to jump, and then she does hear Edward's voice. One of the things she says to him is, you won't stay with me any other way, as in, like, if she doesn't jump, he won't stay. I just feel like she's trying to once again join him in eternal death.
Yeah.
And, you know,
he's denied her the ability to stay with her through the means that she still exists on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's denied the vampire route to her thus far. Like, mm-hmm. she doesn't think that's at all a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, he really underestimates her investment in him.
And leaving the human world.
Yeah.
Essentially. A place where she does not feel she belongs.
Mm-hmm.
And has always struggled with that. So she jumps in. She enjoys the thrill for, you know, a second, and she gets into the water and it's really cold. Mm-hmm. And she gets caught in the current of the water and is being, like, thrashed around, can't tell which way's up, which way's down. And she's so cold that she's starting to kind of, like, lose feeling and, like, lose control of her body, and she has no idea how to get out of this situation. And the hallucination of Edward is, like, begging her to keep swimming. But she's Just whole ass giving up.
Yeah, and what I think Edward's hallucination doesn't realize is that, like, his, like, the fact that he's still talking to her makes her not want to continue to fight, because she says, why would I fight when I was so happy where I was? Mm-hmm. And then happiness makes the whole dying thing pretty bearable.
Yeah. She says, like, I didn't want to fight anymore, and it wasn't the lightheadedness or the cold or the failure of my arms as my muscles gave out. That made me content to stay where I was. I was almost happy that it was over. This was an easier death than others I'd faced. So in this, like, by the end of this little part here, she's, like, acknowledging that she would be happy to die. Mm-hmm. So that's significant.
Yeah. And she, hate that for her. She's like, oh, I want, like, my eyes, my life's not going to flash before my eyes, but Edward's here, so I don't care.
Yeah. I think she, like, might hit the rocks or something, but yeah. The end of the chapter is that she's being dragged away. She thinks down into the ocean, but that's actually not what's happening.
Yeah.
But she's completely succumbed to giving up and dying in this part, which, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It kind of comes out of nowhere. Of course it doesn't. Like, all the signs are there. Mm-hmm. But because it's never laid out as, like, a pre-planned thing, mm-hmm. like, it's very spontaneous, mm-hmm. That makes it kind of feel like it's coming out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I feel like I didn't really bat... It's another thing that I didn't really bat my eye at when I was a child.
No.
I was just like, oh, yeah.
When
she's
I was...
just
yeah.
having a hard time.
She's when swimming. I was younger, I was just like... I was like, oh, she jumped off the cliff because she wanted to hear Edward. That's it.
Yeah, that's normal.
I, like, glossed over all of the...
Children are resilient. Sometimes we just...
Sometimes we just block it out.
We just don't take in information that is too much.
Literally. Last chapter 15, she thinks, goodbye, I love you. And that's it.
I hate that.
Yeah.
It really is a turning point for Bella and the story. Mm-hmm. I will say that. Which we will explore after this quick commercial break for the Forkscast and the news.
Today, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
Oh.
It is 50 degrees and raining.
Beautiful.
In Forks. High wind warning for the North Coast. And it's going to rain for a couple more hours and then every single day for the next 10 days.
Wow, that's a lot of rain. Mm-hmm. The news in Forks, community announcements from 2 days ago. The Cherish Our Children virtual auction, the 20th annual one, in fact, will again be offered virtually on Facebook on November 12th and 13th. If you would like to donate an item, you can contact Cherish at QuillUtNation.org. But unfortunately, it's only physical pickup, so I think this is limited to people in that area. So we cannot participate. However, I think this is something that is put on by the Quillute Nation.
And oh, cool.
It raises money to buy Christmas gifts for kids in Laputia and Forks.
Nice.
Isn't that cute? Also, on Friday, November 26th, at 6:30 p.m., there is a Peninsula Native History and Culture presentation. It says, the Olympic Peninsula is the homeland of several tribal groups. Learn more about the histories, cultures, and traditions of Indigenous peoples. Doesn't seem like it's going to be on Zoom, but if it was, I would love to be there.
Yeah.
But there's no other information about it. But you know what? I'll keep my eye out on ForksForum.com. Okay, so now it's time for the final installment of our mini segment.
I literally cannot wait to hear what you've prepared.
I haven't prepared anything.
Well, never mind.
But that's the thing. Edward, where the hell have you been, Luca? We know where he is now. Mm-hmm. We've timed it really well, actually.
We did. We actually did it, like,
pretty perfectly. We did it really well. I mean, was he in Brazil the whole time? Probably.
No.
Okay, fine.
He was everywhere that we said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Including Maine.
You're right, sorry.
Maine, USA.
That was a lapse in judgment.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in this section, it's like, he's definitely been there. And, like, at what point does he go to Italy? Like, because when does Alice have that vision, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's definitely, like, either there now or he's, like, leaving right now. Because this all happens very fast.
Yeah, it does.
I'm actually not certain, and let's keep our eyes out for this. I'm not certain that Bella even sleeps until after she gets back.
Holy shit.
From this moment.
Yeah, let's...
Which I hate for her. Anyway, yeah. Edward is in Rio. Why? No idea.
No.
Why is why this place over and over again?
Probably the big Catholic energy.
Probably church.
It's like Christ the Redeemer.
He's just going to church.
Yep.
I find it interesting that this is where he goes to be depressed and sad, and yet it's also where he brings Bella for their honeymoon.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, babe, let's go to the place I was when I thought that you had killed yourself.
Maybe he owns an apartment there.
He must.
And it was just, like, convenient for him.
Who knows what he's doing? He could be doing anything. For all I know, he could be visiting the 15 most Instagrammable places in Rio de Janeiro.
You're right. He was probably, like, doing it for the gram.
Yeah. What if he had a secret MySpace account where he logged his travels?
And all the music is My Chemical Romance.
Yeah. He's definitely looking at the thing.
What?
The Christ.
Oh, Christ the Redeemer.
Christ the Redeemer. I think
also prominently featured, by the way, and this is very important, in the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet.
Oh. There are
several shots of the Christ the Redeemer.
Interesting.
Statue. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take place in Brazil, does it?
I have no idea. That movie is like an absolute fever dream.
That's
to
the
me.
Claire Danes one? Yes, it's the Claire Danes one. That's interesting.
It's a postmodern city named Verona Beach. And I guess, I mean, maybe be able to read into the setting.
Yeah, that's a really cool connection. I wonder if he went to Isle Esme at all, or if he was literally just in Rio. That would have been kind of weird if he went to Isle Esme.
Yeah.
There's lots of mountains in the area. He's probably subsisting off of things there when he is eating. We know what he's doing. We know he's just sitting and being sad and looking at Big Jesus and using a flip phone, I guess.
So I guess it isn't... So in the Baz Luhrmann, it's not Christ the Redeemer, but it is another large statue of Christ that is supposed to emulate Christ the Redeemer.
That's super interesting. He's about to get on a super quick flight over to Italy. Let me just look up the prices real quick.
Yeah, let's see how much Edward was dropping. I wonder what it's like for, like, vampires to go through security. Because, like, don't cold objects made of metal, like, set... Like, he's not made of metal.
No.
But, like, I think it's, like,
But they use infrared.
Yeah, like, I think it's, like, a heat thing. Like, wouldn't they be concerned? Or, like, did they just, like, charm their way? But this is post-9/11.
Yeah.
Like, this book series is post-9/11. So, like, I mean, famously post-9/11 because 9/11 made Twilight possible.
Mm-hmm.
Look it up.
You can get a connecting flight, you know, not a direct flight, from Rio to Rome, starting at $800. But you're probably going to spend, you know, roughly 1.5. Edward probably flew direct, so he probably just hopped on the first direct flight and spent a bunch of money. That's a long flight. It's like, it can be like a 20-hour journey if you're connecting.
JJ just sent me something that he'd like to have included on the show.
Okay.
And it's the best apple picking places around Forks, Washington.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fuck this. Edward's going to Italy. I didn't have anything prepared. Yeah. I knew it was over.
Lazy J Tree Farms in Port Angeles.
Okay.
Hydrangea Rangers in Sequim.
Mm-hmm.
And Muscle and Arm Farm in Freeland. And Latin's Country Cider Mill and Farm in Olympia. Along with some other places.
Let's go.
Let's go apple picking. So if you're in the Forks area and you'd like to go apple picking this fall.
Considered.
Good luck, because the weather's pretty shitty.
Yeah.
And thanks, JJ, for that contribution.
So, chapter 16. Paris. So, she doesn't die.
Nope.
Most importantly,
she live. She's confused. She is upset that the voice that she hears upon regaining consciousness is Jacob.
And not Edward.
And not Edward.
Really makes you think.
Really makes you think about
how she feels.
How she feels about him.
Jacob is
reviving her.
Yeah, getting the water out of her lungs.
Mm-hmm.
She says this is a fun visual, that the water is coming out of her lungs. It gushed out in amazing volume. Absolute torrents pouring from my mouth and nose.
Horrifying.
She's realizing that she's alive. She realizes that Sam is also there.
Mm-hmm.
She's very cold and completely drenched.
And Jacob has told Sam to control the narrative that she fell.
He did?
Yeah. Because on page 365, Sam says she didn't hurt her back or anything when she fell.
Oh. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah.
He's like trying to Sam.
I think this is Sam speaking. So I think that
Sam
either assumes that Bella fell. I think Sam assumes Bella fell off the cliff, which is so reasonable to believe because she's so clumsy. She has really set herself up for not having to deal with the emotions of people knowing she jumped.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacob doesn't correct him. because I think he knows that it would be intrusive for Sam and thus the entire pack
to know
that Bella.
But he's gonna find out.
Jumped, I guess.
He'll find out eventually. Yeah, like Jacob's not gonna be able to keep it from them.
No, like there's like three realms of knowing what's going on. Sam thinks Bella just like wandered up there and fell.
Yeah.
Jacob thinks that Bella fell as a extreme sport and had no idea that she was going to be in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bella, in extreme mental distress,
yeah,
made peace with death.
Yeah.
And jumped. So that's interesting.
They mention coming back from the hospital. Sam is going back to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And Jacob's going to take Bella to Billy's house. And as she's being carried away, she notices what looks like a spark of fire out on the water. And then on the next page, Jacob tells her that they did not find Victoria and that she took off into the water because the werewolves can't follow them there. Also, inexplicably, Harry Clearwater has had a heart attack and is in the hospital.
What does this do?
I don't know.
Like, how does this function? Like,
it's so sad.
I just really don't. I feel like fantasy writers think they have to kill characters.
Yeah.
And, like, this is the compromise to, like, kill a background character that, like, people wouldn't be so devastated. I don't know. When, like, books get popular, people are, like, critical of the fact that no one dies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what does it function as beyond that to have Harry Clearwater die?
Yeah.
It provides partnership for Charlie in the future because it frees up Sue.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that doesn't seem like it really was a huge, like, thing that needed to be resolved. Like, Charlie being alone is not... I mean, I guess it might be something that allows Bella to take the leap into vampiredom knowing that, like, Sue Clearwater will be Charlie's companion and that, like, Charlie won't just, like...
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
I think it does two things, and I don't really feel like this is the only way that those two things could have been done. One is that, like, we know that it will push Seth and Leah into phasing, which are, you can make the argument they didn't need anything to push them there.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that in this section, it kind of seems like Harry dying, which he eventually does in this section, kind of wakes Bella up and, like, gives her a little reality check.
Yeah.
And kind of, like, helps her think more clearly about, like, what she's done and, like, what she doesn't want to do. And it seems like she's thinking about trying to, like, kind of take her life more seriously and choose to live.
Mm-hmm.
And she does that in an interesting way that we can talk about. But she's starting to think about it, like, knowing that Harry's had this heart attack, coming to the realization that, like, what she did was really serious and she almost died and she didn't even think about Charlie and or anyone and what it would have done to them. It's kind of making her feel like, oh, I really should not have done that.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. I do also think, as you said, like, this could have been accomplished in other ways. I also think, like, both of those things could be accomplished with Harry having a heart attack and making a full recovery.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really somber. It really is. It's kind of a tone shift, too. Like, there's a real turn here. But Bella is at the Black's house. Jake gives her some clothes to change into, but she's like, I'm not going to change into them yet because I'm too tired. But I'm like, you need to get out of your freezing wet clothes or you're going to get pneumonia.
Here's my question. Like, one, that's crazy. Yeah. In a world where I'm wearing wet clothes, say this all the time. I have a 15-minute limit between when I go to the beach and when I, like, if I'm wet from water, I have a 15-minute window where I need to be completely dry or I'm going to be everybody's problem. Until I am dry. Everybody's problem.
Mm-hmm.
And also, has Bella never had a UTI or a yeast infection?
Probably not.
Sitting in wet clothes? No.
She could contract a whole host of medical issues from that alone, let alone the fact that she just had waterlogged lungs.
Yeah.
And on the next page or something, Jacob is like, oh, maybe I should have taken you to a hospital. Yes.
Yeah.
She should have medical attention and she does not get it. She did drown, technically.
Yeah.
And she sees no doctor about this.
No.
Thank
God she becomes a vampire within less than a year, because God only knows what the longstanding medical effects of, like, all of her untreated injuries are.
Oh, my God. I can't believe that. It is so ridiculous to me that she doesn't go to a hospital immediately.
The fact that she sits and sleeps in wet clothes.
Yes.
How exhausted must she be to sleep?
Yeah, she's really out of
it. In wet clothes.
Yeah.
Like, when she talks about how, like, the clothes are warming up because of the, like,
the radiator.
Like, sitting in warm, wet clothes Bacteria.
Still bad.
Bacteria.
Yeah.
There's bacteria. Come on.
No one's assessed her for any injuries that she might have incurred.
Like, if she's sitting, yeah, if she's sitting in the clothes she fell in, like, God only knows, like, she could have cut herself and be bleeding into her clothes.
She could have hit her head.
Yeah.
She probably did.
She, yeah, not a brain cell. People often say that the Cullens will pass around one brain cell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm not convinced that anybody in this whole universe.
Yeah.
Charlie has
a normal amount
brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like,
well, that's because they're all, none of their brains have reached full maturation.
Yeah.
They're all under 25.
That's true. They're children.
Yeah. But even still. So Bella decides to start thinking about Romeo and Juliet. She's really painting a picture for herself here.
It's extensive.
It is extensive. So in this scenario, obviously, she's Juliet and Edward is Romeo and Jacob is Paris. Mm-hmm. And I have never seen anyone project harder in my life.
Yeah.
Which, like, to be fair, what is the purpose of literature if not to create headcanons and project yourself onto them?
So true.
And that's exactly what she's doing here.
She entertains the initial question, what would Juliet have done if Romeo had left her not because he was banished, but because he lost interest? If he got back with Rosalind or he just disappeared instead of marrying her? And she then goes to extrapolate to the question, well, she thinks then, would Juliet have married Paris in the end to please her parents and keep the peace? And then she says, there's really not much to Paris at all here. He's just a stick figure, a placeholder, a threat, a deadline to force her hand. And then she starts projecting and she says, but what if there were more to Paris? And she decides to think about, what if Paris was Jacob and was really wonderful to her and there was really no feelings there and she was still a sad empty broken shell, but like he like took care of her and like she could confide in him and like he was patient and kind, mm-hmm. and that she couldn't live without him and he really loved her. And what if she loved Paris?
Yeah, what
not
if
like
what
Romeo
if?
Not like that, but how, like, what if it was enough that she wanted him to be happy too? Like,
those are a
twist.
Lot of what-ifs.
People want their friends to be happy.
So
and people
true.
Love their friends. You are feeling friendship.
Yep. Yep. So in this little section here, she's really thinking, like, she will never be over Edward. She's even saying, like, I knew how Juliet would feel. She wouldn't go back to her old life.
No.
She would have never moved on, I was sure. Even if she lived until she was old and gray, every time she closed her eyes, it would have been Romeo's face she saw behind her lips. You don't know that, and you don't know that you're going to feel that way.
You also, like, what we fail to recognize here is that, like, Romeo and Juliet, much like this story takes place over the tiniest fraction of Juliet's life.
Yeah.
She is 13 years old. We have no idea, like, what she would be like in 5 years, mm-hmm. 10 years, like 10 years. She could be 23 and still not fully, like, the person she's going to be in her life.
Yeah. And it's also, like, with Romeo and Juliet, it is, I think, the circumstances of their love that makes it so intense for them, you know? Like, the fact that it's forbidden, they have all these obstacles, that is part of, like, what leads them to dying before they can even do anything else.
Maybe this is a good time to say that I famously hate Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, for sure.
Famously.
Oh, yeah. I think we've talked about it before.
Yeah. I just... I don't hate them. I don't hate it in the way that a lot of people hate it. I don't want to, like, replicate the, like, they're stupid.
No.
Like, thing. That's not why I hate it. I hate Shakespeare. I hate his tragedies. I think he should have written his comedies and then died. Like, I think he should not have written a tragedy.
I think it's good as, like, a commentary on, I mean, a number of things.
Yeah.
You know, it's useful to sort of think about not only these ideas about love, I think that's sort of, like, secondary to what the story actually is. Like, it really is more about the political rivalry and what that is doing, which is kind of the more interesting part of Twilight, mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that's really what it's about, even though there's this romantic story being told. I mean, you could argue that one is more prominently featured than the other, but whatever. Yeah, Bella really just takes it at face value, which is interesting. And this whole section, I was like, wow, she really is so young.
Yeah, yeah. Of course she reads it like that, because she's
course.
A child.
She doesn't know anything else. And, like, she thinks she's met the love of her life. and that she's never going to be happy again. There's like an emotional permanency mm-hmm. issue almost, where she thinks that whatever she's feeling, it's like never going to go away. But this section is like really, what it really shows us is that like she doesn't feel that way about Jacob, even though she's trying to say all these things that I think could be skewed to be in favor of Team Jacob TM. She says, if Romeo was really gone, never coming back, would it have mattered whether or not Juliet had taken Paris up on his offer? Maybe she should have tried to settle into the leftover scraps of life that were left behind. Oh, how romantic.
Yeah.
How romantic. Maybe that would have been as close to happiness as she could get. As if, like, settling for a romantic relationship that you're not invested in is better than not having a romantic relationship. Yeah, like, what the hell is that?
She cannot view her life outside of the boxes that she's, like, put herself in. Mm-hmm. Because she thinks that she experienced romantic happiness once. She thinks that that has to be a part of her life.
Yeah.
Which, like, is not true.
Yeah.
Like, some people experience, like, a romantic relationship that's wonderful for them. And then romance is not a part of their life
mm-hmm.
for the rest of their life. And that doesn't mean that their life is less whole than it was. It makes sense that she thinks that because she does, in many ways, like, box herself into these, like, societal things that, like, no, Stephanie Meyer would never let her break out of that.
No, no.
Stephanie is a product of those boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, of course, Bella is, like, is constrained to those in a way that, like, I think a lot of people reading this now are like, what the fuck?
Right.
Like,
right, I think that's why, like, some people like to say they're Team Bella, because, like, the best option for her at this point, like, would reasonably to be alone,
mm-hmm.
but that would never be allowed.
No.
Can you imagine if this series ended with her being on her own?
No. No. Yeah, it's wild.
She says, I was reading too much into the story, for sure. Romeo mm-hmm. wouldn't change his mind. That's why people still remembered his name, always twined with hers, Romeo and Juliet. That's why it was a good story. Juliet gets dumped and ends up with Paris would never have been a hit. Take that, Team Jacob.
Yeah, I was literally like, fuck you, Jacob. They never let the underdog win.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that Romeo doesn't change his mind.
Yeah.
It's like right in front of her. Yeah, she does say here, Harry's heart attack had pushed everything suddenly into perspective for me. Perspective that I didn't want to see, because if I admitted to the truth of it, it would mean that I would have to change my ways, like not being reckless anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She says, could I live like that? And really what I think she's saying is, like, can I live at all?
She's realizing that the way she's been living her life is the easy choice for her, but it is also the choice that causes a lot of pain for others.
Mm-hmm.
And for her. For her, yeah, and for her. But that she's gonna likely, if she chooses to survive this, she's going to need to make the hard choice to, like, re-engage with life in a way that is different than how she's been living it, which is huge.
Yeah, it's a really big moment. She says right after that, after could I live like that, she says, maybe. It wouldn't be easy. In fact, it would be downright miserable to give up my hallucinations and try to be a grown-up. But maybe I should do it, and maybe I could if I had Jacob.
That is so awful.
That's so dependent.
It's like when people cut out one part of their life mm-hmm. that is, like, bad, and then they think that they've conquered it, but they've really just, like, replaced it with another
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah.
Which, like, that's fine, like, and, like, sometimes you can, like, replace things with things that are less harmful. Like, I know a lot of people, like, stop smoking and start doing something else. You know, there's harm reduction, it exists.
Yeah.
But, like, this is doing the exact same thing. It's putting all of her eggs in the basket that Jacob's gonna be there and not gonna hurt her and not going to disappoint her and not gonna die, and he's harmable. Like, there's no guarantees there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is kind of the part where she's diving more, throughout the rest of the chapter, she's diving more into this idea of, like, well, maybe I should just put aside my reservations and decide to be with Jacob, because it yes. would make him happy. And it's like, what would make him happy is being in a relationship with you if you felt the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think, foolish of her to assume that he would be okay long-term with her not reciprocating.
Yeah, I think what he's not vocalizing is his assumption that if they started to date, she would start to feel the
yeah.
same way that
and
he
she
does.
Might, but she also likely is pretty, won't. Like, it seems like if she did, it would take a very long time.
Yes.
Like, a couple of years, I would think.
Yeah. That's a long time to wait for somebody to feel on the same page as you.
Yes.
Because likely Jacob is going to be looking for, like, a progression of their relationship that she might not be.
She's not authentically interested in.
Like, it just really calls into question, like, all the benchmarks of, like, saying I love you, having sex.
Mm-hmm.
He would expect those things.
Yeah.
Eventually. Mm-hmm. And God knows how long it would take for her to be ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that didn't feel incredibly triggering for her.
Right, right. Like, it's one thing for him to wait for it when they're not in an established relationship. Mm-hmm. It would be, everything would just become so magnified if you were waiting for it while in a relationship with her,
the
right?
The resentment becomes different. That would form, mm-hmm. too. Just like, oh my God. Rest in peace, Harry.
Yeah, Harry's
dead.
Harry's dead. I did cry when reading this it's like brutal.
It's very, very sad.
Yeah.
There's a little bit more processing of this than, like, there is in the movie.
Yes.
Which is nice, but it's also sadder because mm-hmm. of that.
Jacob's going to bring her home. She says, what was the right thing to do? As if it could be right or wrong to choose a relationship. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine my life without Jacob now. I cringed away from the idea of even trying to imagine that. Somehow he'd become essential to my survival. But to leave things the way they were, was that cruel, as Mike had accused? Why are you listening to Mike? Why? Why is his name coming up at this moment?
The next part is wild, too.
Yes.
Literally this whole page we might just read.
Yeah.
I remembered wishing that Jacob were my brother. I realize now that all I really wanted was a claim on him. It didn't feel brotherly when he held me like this. It just felt nice. Warm and comforting and familiar. Safe. Jacob was a safe harbor. I could stake a claim. I had that much within my power.
It's like, one, what are your intentions, girl? Also, it doesn't feel brotherly because he's not doing it in a brotherly way. Brothers, a brother wouldn't touch you like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's why it doesn't feel brotherly.
Jacob has no relationships until he imprints on a baby.
Yeah.
And, like, what would happen if, like, Jacob did try to have, like, an actual relationship? Bella would be so incredibly possessive over him that it wouldn't be possible.
Yeah.
And it's like, this whole thing is so messy.
It's so messy. And she's literally describing the decision to, like, enter into a romantic relationship as with him as staking a claim.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, we should not think of possession and relationships mm-hmm. as the same thing. She knows, on some level, she knows that all, like, the reason why she's doing this is because she doesn't want to lose him.
Yeah.
And she's trying to now convince herself and rationalize it to herself that maybe she could be happy eventually and it would make him happy, so it's the right decision.
And she's also rationalizing that it's not a bad thing to do to him,
but it is. It would be manipulative.
She says, even, I would have to admit that I was crazy, that there were voices in my head, that I was broken, and then explain it right so that he would know I wasn't settling, that he was much too good for me, which is not
how she's truly not feels. Describing it that way. Yeah, she's not.
And then she says,
like,
and I recognized and I knew that he would take me in spite of it all. He wouldn't even pause to think it through. And that's manipulative.
Yeah.
Like, it's wrong to think of another person in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you shouldn't be thinking of someone who you are trying to be a friend to in this way.
Yeah. And I think that she thinks, like, well, because he would say yes, that makes it okay.
Yeah.
But she would be taking advantage of his feelings mm-hmm. if this were the case. And he would, in some ways, be taking advantage of her, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, it would not be a good, like, there's no way for this to be a good situation.
It would be mutually horrible, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's why people don't do this, you know?
Yes, and I think also, if you're in this situation, and I think that there are human parallels, like, there are human relationships where people consciously make the choice to be with someone that they know does not provide the same feeling of love that they have experienced before.
Yeah.
Like, it's not abnormal for people to quote-unquote settle. I don't really love that mm-hmm. term. But, like, I think what would be more powerful is if she could say with certainty in this situation, like, I think it would be powerful for her to think, if Edward came back tomorrow.
He does.
If Edward came back tomorrow, would I confidently be able to say that I could still remain committed to this relationship with Jacob
mm-hmm.
and not be pulled back? Mm-hmm. That, I feel like, is the only time that it's fair to enter into a relationship with someone.
Yeah.
When you're still this attached to that other person.
Right.
Like, I think you need to be able to confidently say that
that she wants to be in this relationship.
She wants to be in it, and that she wants to be in it so much that she's willing to commit to it, even if 7 years down the line,
mm-hmm.
she's married to Jacob,
mm-hmm.
Edward comes back, she would not uproot
mm-hmm.
and get back with Edward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that is where she would need to be, and she is
She's not even close to that. Yeah.
Nowhere near.
She's not even able to say, I want to be in a relationship with Jacob. Yes. Which is all the only thing that you would she would really need to be able to say in order to make that happen. Mm-hmm. But because she can't say that, she's doing this whole mental
arithmetic.
Yeah, Olympics, if you will, mm-hmm. to try to make it make sense. Like, she's trying to make sense of her life.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't force yourself to want something. You can't. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Just don't pretend.
The expectation she has on herself to immediately, like, be ready for a commitment like this is...
Yeah. And I mean, just to, like, offer some sympathy. Like, I think that it's hard to know what you want. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're not educated, as many of us are not, if you never receive any formal or informal education or information about, like, how a relationship should be or, like, how it's supposed... not like quote unquote supposed to feel, not that there's one way, but like how it might feel for you, mm-hmm. and like what boundaries are and literally everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you don't have a good sense of that, and if you don't have a good sense of like, you know, your own boundaries, and like if you don't have a sense of like what's important to you or what you want, then like it's probably going to be hard to be in any kind of significant relationship,
mm-hmm.
because how are you going to get what you want if you don't know what it is? But she does know what she wants. She just wants Edward, and she's too afraid to admit it, so...
Yeah, she just... Oh, my God. Pain.
Yeah.
This book is pain.
It's pain. She says, this, just to go even further, I would have to commit to this. Commit as much of me as there was left. Every one of the broken pieces. It was the only way to be fair to him. Would it be so wrong to try to make Jacob happy, even if the love I felt for him was no more than a weak echo of what I was capable of? Even if my heart was far away, wandering and grieving after my fickle Romeo, would it be so very wrong? Yes. Arguably, yes.
And this is, this part on the next page is mm-hmm. wild to me because she's putting so much pressure on herself to decide right now what to do.
Right now.
She says... If I turned my face to the side, if I pressed my lips against his bare shoulder, I knew without any doubt exactly what would follow. It would be very easy. There would be no need for explanations tonight. And she, like, starts to think, I need to make a move on Jacob now. And I'm like...
You almost died today.
No, you don't. Yeah, what is it with people experiencing trauma today. And then wanting to make huge decisions?
Yeah. I mean, there's probably something about that.
There is.
There is definitely stuff about that. But, like, a man is dead, and...
Yeah.
I have no idea why she needs to do this right now.
She's putting so much pressure. Yeah.
Stephenie Meyer knows it's her last chance.
Right.
So, she's making it that way, I guess.
Cursed.
Like, she says it would be very easy, but could I do it? Could I betray my absent heart to save my pathetic life? Why would this save your life? Why?
Because
it make sense.
Well, I think she thinks she can't survive without him.
Yeah.
Like, I do think she doesn't think she'll make it if she doesn't choose this. I think in her mind, the choices are convince yourself that you can be with Jacob.
Yeah.
Or die.
Yeah. Basically.
Honestly. Like, yeah. I do think those are her choices.
Yeah. She's thinking here, like... Maybe Edward would want this for me. Like, maybe Edward would want me to be happy, which, like, yes, he does.
I don't know if he does.
Well, not with Jacob.
No, I don't think he wants this.
Well, I think that it was one of his reasons for leaving was, like, so that she could have a quote-unquote normal happy life and, like, get married to someone mm-hmm. who can age with her and blah, blah, blah. So, like, in some way, like, yes, that is what he wanted, even though, like, of course he doesn't want it.
Yeah.
And he definitely doesn't want it with Jacob, although I don't know.
Yeah.
So she like is thinking about that and hears Edward's voice say, be happy to her in this mm-hmm. moment. And it causes her to freeze. Jacob notices her, like tense her body essentially. And he like rolls down the window or opens the door or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he is hit with the thick stench of a vampire.
I wonder what vampires smell like.
I think it's described as they smell like sickly sweet to the wolves.
So they think it's Victoria. But then Stephenie Meyer is like dropping hints that she hasn't been able to talk about a car in great detail in several chapters.
Yeah.
So she talks about the Mercedes S55 AMG with the horsepower and the color and the frame and the seats and the tint.
I might be the furthest thing from an autophile.
Sounds like you're not.
Like you're not. I could tell you everything about that particular car. I knew the horsepower. I knew the feel of the powerful engine purring through the frame. I knew the rich smell of the leather seats.
Stephenie Meyer wants to fuck this car.
Yeah.
Catch her on your next episode of My Strange Addiction. I'm in love with my car.
Anyway, it's Carlisle's car.
Yeah. So Bella is like, take me back. It's the Cullens.
Yeah.
Which, of course, does not go over well with Jacob.
No, he's personally offended.
He's pissed. He says he's upset. And she says, take me back. And he says, take yourself back, Bella.
Yeah.
And she's shocked that he speaks to her in that way.
It is such a contrast to what was just happening. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, there's so much that both of them have not considered.
Yeah.
You know, like, even with just their friendship, mm-hmm. the obvious reality that, like, they feel very differently about vampires. And I think that Jacob would probably expect her to change her mind.
Had this not happened and maybe Bella does try to settle and stay with Jacob, like,
yeah.
there would be eventually some sort of, like, big tension
mm-hmm.
that they would need to work through
mm-hmm.
yeah. around that topic.
It's definitely a point of tension.
And she's so naive because...
this could be a trick.
Yeah.
It really could.
It could. That's so true.
It, like, really so easily could be a trick. Like, Victoria could have stolen Carlisle's car.
Or, like, just gotten the same kind of car.
Yeah.
So, but this little conversation between Edward and Bella... or, excuse
Almost.
Me. I'm just so excited. Jacob and Bella...
contain yourself.
Literally. Is really interesting because he says... look, Bella, I can't go back. Treaty or no treaty, that's my enemy in there. Which is a really bold statement.
Yeah.
And also, it's true. He says, I have to tell Sam right away, this changes things. We can't be caught on their territory. And
Jacob loves to make up his mind as to when he cares about the treaty or not.
Yeah. She says, Jake, it's not a war. And then it's also like, but it's literally biological warfare against the Quileutes.
Yeah.
So like, it kind of is. It's a war.
Drop it down.
And they're losing.
Yeah.
So it's fun.
He runs away. He's like, bye, Bella. I really hope you don't die. Sprints off into the darkness. Bella says, remorse pinned me against the seat for one long second. What had I just done to Jacob? Has she done anything?
She fails to consider that he doesn't know that she's been grappling with, like, the question of, like,
yeah,
should I be with Jacob?
Yeah. So it really could be a trick. And she also, in this moment, remembers that she saw the little fire on the water. And she's mm-hmm. like, oh, puts the pieces together that was Victoria, and she could be close, and this really could be Victoria in her house.
That's really it.
That's it. She turns on the light, and it says that someone was there waiting for her.
It's Alice.
Yay!
I'm so excited.
I'm excited. She's about to, like, say a bunch of probably really racist stuff about wolves.
Yeah,
but, like,
say racist things. She's also probably gonna accuse Bella of, like, trying to die by suicide, which is probably, like, accurate, but I imagine that it won't be handled in a way that feels good to read.
For sure.
I don't think Alice is going to be like, are you okay?
No.
I think she's going to be like,
are you stupid?
What the fuck are you doing? Which is, like, not the trauma-informed response we would want for someone in a very fragile emotional state.
For sure.
But whatever. I guess that's that.
Yeah.
What a fucking horrible section.
Yeah.
No, it was very beautifully written.
Yeah.
It was very compelling. It made me feel things.
Yes, it was very rich in content. So thanks for that. No more.
No more.
This has been Gender Forking Before Dawn. See you next time with two more chapters. We are in the final third of the book. We're now going to be on the race to Edward. Edward's coming back. I don't know how I feel about it, but...
Eddie boy.
It's happening.
I can't wait to see him.
Can't wait to see my boy.
New person to be mad at just dropped.
All right, we're going to go pick apples. So everyone enjoy your fall.
And fall. See you
next time. That's all, Forks.
Thank you for listening to Gender Forking, a Twilight Saga podcast. Seasons 1, 2, and 3 are now streaming anywhere podcasts can be found.
To stay updated about the podcast, follow us on Instagram at genderforking. For more Twilight content from us, follow us at bowlingsharebellas.tumblr.com.
With questions, comments, and any other inquiries, please email us at bowlingsharebellas@gmail.com. If you like what you hear and want to support the upkeep and production of our podcast, visit patreon.com/genderforking.
The music you are hearing is from O. Lucifer.